This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the les, bi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Sounds like somebody else's show, not our show.
Somebody step on a square car there?
Good evening, this is Jack Kaminsky.
And Jennifer Renee.
And
Glenn Holt.
Tonight.
My ears are pinging.
Yeah. Tonight, what's left of all of our ears, this is unusual. I mean, you usually are like squeak-free. Well, we'll figure that out. But tonight's show, we're, of course, going to be talking to David Elliott from Washington as he does the Inside the Beltway and Beyond report. And then Joan Devlin is going to be interviewing Laura Flanders of Radio Nation on Air America, author of a new book, True Grit, True Democrats Take Back the Politics from the Politicians. I heard an interview on this and it sounds really good. And, of course, Joan does fabulous interviews. And in the second hour, we're going to be talking to the people from PomPom. It's the people who want to keep the parade in Montrose, and they have a meeting coming up this Wednesday at 6:30 at the community center. And then, in our last segment, we're going to be talking to director Jason Stevens about Our Favorite Things, the latest offering from the Houston Pride Band, which has a concert on Thursday, May 10th. And just in case you missed it, I mean, there's been so much media coverage of it all, we have an election for city council to replace Shelley on city council. You know, she ran for Congress, and she was in there for like two or three weeks and just got everybody.
And made everybody mad at her in Washington.
So you can still early vote tomorrow from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., and there's a number of locations, and the best way to find out that information goes to harrisvotes.org. And, of course, the regular election day is Saturday, and that's from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., and you can also check on harrisvotes.org because probably where you normally vote, you may not be voting because there's such a small election turnout they expect that they collapsed a lot of the polling places. So remember to vote, and you can go to the caucus's website, hglbtpc.org, to see who they endorsed. So coming up tonight, but before we do that, you know, we're asking you to give us a little bit of support for us at 713-526-5738 and make that pledge to KPFT because, you know, it's our spring fundraiser. And it is, you know, we're asking for that money to help keep us on the air. There is a new, I guess, I don't know if they even call it the folio anymore, but KPFT has a new newsletter. I'm not sure if they're sending it out to all their members.
I like that.
But it's
the KPFT voice. I like that. Name and everything.
It's available at the station, and they're handing it around the community also. Mm. But one of the things that have been done recently is they brought the power back up to 100,000 watts. They were down at 28,000 for a number of years because the FCC, da-da-da-da. So they brought the power up, which is, you know, it's a great increase, so it's going to help us out a bit more to cover some of those areas that our signal was a little bit shaky. And, you know, it's not like, even though it went from 28 to 100,000, it's not like it's doubling. It's sort of like a light bulb. It sort of works logarithmically. And so it will fill in some of the areas, but not, you know, like double our power. The other thing that I understand that KPFT is working on is digital, that they'll be sending out the signal digital, which also means that they can send out a second signal, like KUHF is doing. Well, of course, that means you have to buy a new radio, though, to get it.
Yeah, I know. I heard that.
But eventually, those will probably come down on price. Anyway, so we're asking you to call us at 713-526-5738. Make that pledge. We will be doing this throughout our program this week and next week. And as always, though, we'd really like to do our regular programming because that's what we're here for. We're here to bring you all this interesting stuff that's going on. You made the announcement last Monday about the Grand Marshals.
Yes, the Grand Marshals this year, not all of them, but the two most important one was Jack Valinsky and Maria Gonzalez. One sitting right here with us and one that is Vice President of the Houston GLBT Political Caucus.
She's actually working the phones as we speak.
She's working the phones. Now, see, that's dedication. You people who haven't voted yet, or if you're just hearing about the election right now, you can still vote tomorrow, 7 to 7, at early voting. And then, of course, the general election is on Saturday from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Look carefully. Don't try to do it like you normally do, because there's a real chance that your precinct may be collapsed and you'll go there and it's not there. So don't be frustrated if that happens. Get out and vote. Your vote is vitally important this time.
And also, the caucus is looking for volunteers Wednesday we're having a meeting at 6 p.m. to talk about the Pride Project. And basically, the Pride Project, we're working with the Houston Equal Rights Alliance, is we are going to be canvassing on the day of the parade and festival of getting people's names added to our list and doing voter registration. And that's one of the biggest things we do during the year. And we know a lot of people like to watch a parade, but the neat thing about volunteering to do this is that it stops before the parade starts.
That's right.
So, and we're actually trying to work on a place where we may be able to all watch the parade. So we're going to be basically taking people's names and numbers and putting them in our database and stuff like that, and that's real important. On Saturday, we're looking for volunteers to help us to get people out to vote, and we will be calling people on their cell phones to say, hey, you know, come out and, you know, remember to vote, because, you know, people are bombarded with so many different things.
Text messages
and also you know, just calling them saying get out and vote.
And if you're out there listening to us and you have not received anything in the mail from the Houston GLBT Political Caucus, then you may not be on their list. You can go to the website and send us an email and you can get on the list. You can become a volunteer. And that's how you keep informed, since we don't have the voice anymore. And you can keep informed with what's going on in our community as far as the politics are concerned by going to the website. Also, you can blog. If you have something to say and you haven't had a vehicle to say it in, you can go to the HGLBT PC blog.
Okay, let's go out to the lobby and see if the phones are ringing off the hooks, which we don't know if they are yet, but let's check out there and see what our goal is.
Well, not just yet. We need to give that phone number out, 713-526-5738. If you like the show, if you're liking what you hear here, give us a call, 713-526-5738. What we're doing in this show is we are looking for a goal of $500. That's a grand total from our listeners that are out there that like what they hear, basically. If it's worth it to you to call in with just a few dollars a month, you know, $60 breaks down to $5 a month. If you'd like to do that with a credit card, it's pretty easy to do. Breaks it down, and you know what? It makes it soft in your wallet, and it's a real big help for us out here. I do have a few people to thank that we haven't gotten to thank so far. We've got Bedina. This is a person from Houston. We've got Gloria calling out from Montgomery, and you know what she said was, in Montgomery, now that we are broadcasting at a higher power, she's able to hear us a little bit more clearly out there, and that it's a big help to have the clarity in an area that's, you know, not right down here in Inner Loop. So we're glad to be able to do that, and we're doing that with those pledge dollars. So give us a call at 713-526-5738. We've also got another person here. This is Carol from Houston, and she specifically had given us a comment here to write down and to put out there that she's glad that we're here to make Houston a better place to live. Word for word, the reason she had called in, the reason she felt it was necessary to give us a call and to let us know that she wanted to support us. So I've got to say thanks to these guys right here. And also, you guys on the show here, thanks for doing what you're doing out here and you know, getting out and letting Houston know what's going on out there. It's a big help.
Thank you. And again, that number is 713-526-5738. Call in and pledge for our show as well as for KPFT. With the higher wattage out there, the people, our community, the GLBT community throughout the city and beyond in the metro area can get a clear signal. They don't have to sit out in their car and drive around trying to get a signal. They can get one wherever they are. And that's what's important. Your pledges and your dollars and donations are making that possible. It's making it possible for KPFT to supply excellent programming and to reach all of the community wherever we may be.
And speaking of reaching, we're going to reach all the way out to Washington, D.C. and bring David Elliott on the line with us. David, what's going on up there?
Well, first of all, Jack, good evening to you, and I hope that tonight's pledge drive goes very well for Pacifica, for your radio station, a very important outlet for Houston. Jack, I'd like to talk to you tonight about America's first national primary.
Yes, and you know, it's going to be really interesting. Us politicals here in Houston, you know, we're going to have an election in November and possibly a runoff in late November, early December, and we'll be like early voting probably in January, possibly. So it's like never ending.
Well, you know, they're already calling it America's first national primary day. They're also calling it Super Duper Tuesday and Tsunami Tuesday.
Yes.
What in the world am I talking about?
Yes. What are you talking about?
I'm talking about February 5th, 2008, next February 5th, when as many as 23 states containing half the nation's population will be casting primary ballots for president. Among these 23 states are the three most populous, California and New York, which already have moved their primary dates to February 5th, and Texas, which is expected to follow suit sometime later this month. And now, Super Tuesday, Super Duper Tuesday in 2008 replaces what previously was the first or second Tuesday in March. We used to call it Super Tuesday.
Right.
Not only are the Democratic and Republican nominations likely to be decided earlier than before, but February 5th will indeed be historic. You know, it's only been about 35 years or so, going back to 1972, since our country really began choosing our presidential nominees through an open and democratic nominating process. But during that period, we have never had anything approaching a national primary day like we will have on the first Tuesday in February of next year. It's almost like we're like France. Of course.
No, we're not like France.
No,
we're not quite like France. But, you know, it is important to point out that there are some early states that still have a key role in choosing the nominees. And I'm going to get into that in a minute. Iowa will go first with its January 14th caucus. Nevada will go second with a caucus on January 19th. New Hampshire, as usual, will hold the first primary election on January 22nd. And both South Carolina and Florida are scheduled to hold primary elections on January 29th. But even those states are not set in stone. New Hampshire officials, afraid that their first in the nation primary status is under siege, are threatening to move their primary all the way to December.
Yeah,
Christmas. Merry Christmas. And national Democratic officials, increasingly frustrated and wary over the front-loading that is going on, are threatening to punish states like Florida by not recognizing any election that is held before February 5th.
Hmm.
Now, there are two ironies that accompany our country's first ever national primary, February 5th of next year. The first irony is that while these states holding primary elections meant to enhance their influence over the process at the expense of states like Iowa and New Hampshire, they may well have diminished it. That's because candidates now are going to have to perform exceedingly well in Iowa and New Hampshire in order to be competitive just a few weeks later.
Yeah, yeah.
So even before we get to Super Duper Tuesday, you know, the national primary, Iowa and New Hampshire become super kingmakers. If you don't finish in the top three in both states, your presidential prospects are probably going to be reduced to the trash bin of history. Now, the second irony is this. Ever since the Democratic reforms that helped lead to George McGovern's nomination in 1972, our primary elections have been getting more and more Democratic, but no longer. Now it is going to take money, money, and more money to compete in the national primary. Not even Hillary Clinton, with the hundreds of millions of dollars she is expected to raise, will be able to saturate the airwaves with TV advertising in every national primary state. She will have to pick and choose, and if you're in the expensive Los Angeles TV market, or Chicago, or Atlanta, or maybe even Houston, or Dallas, or Miami, or San Francisco, you probably won't see her ads on TV. And you won't see ads of any of the other candidates on network television. And if you're a lesser candidate with fewer dollars, you may not advertise anywhere. Or if you do, you might look to try to pick off a less expensive state that's voting on February 5th, like Missouri, New Mexico, Oklahoma, or Tennessee. So, who does National Primary Day favor? Well, it all depends on the fundraising. Right now, Hillary Clinton leads all candidates in fundraising, although Barack Obama is competitive and John Edwards a little bit less so. Among Republicans, Mitt Romney and Rudolph Giuliani are competitive, with Fred Thompson prepared to join that top tier. So, who does National Primary Day penalize? It penalizes any candidate who is not currently in the top tier, but who scores an upset in Iowa, New Hampshire, or the other early states, such as Nevada or South Carolina. Why does it hurt such a candidate? Because a dark horse candidate who does surprisingly well in Iowa or New Hampshire will not have the time to both raise the money mm-hmm. and make the necessary media buys in the hundreds of TV markets that will be in play on National Primary Day, February 5th. So consider, for instance, Jimmy Carter in 1976. He came out of nowhere to win the Iowa caucus. It is doubtful whether, under today's rules, Carter could have quickly turned his success in Iowa into enough money and muscle to compete effectively in the number of states that will be up for grabs on February 5th. So, we're too far out to be able to predict with any confidence who the two major party nominees are going to be. But my own observation at this early juncture is that Hillary Clinton has a better shot at capturing the nomination than any other Democrat.
Yeah, yeah.
And I got to get the Republicans in there, Jack. If he can survive some early stumbles on the campaign trail, Mitt Romney looks like a strong Republican contender.
Well, it's really interesting because the latest polls show that Bush is at his lowest popularity ever.
28%. You're correct. A Newsweek poll out this weekend.
Right, with a bullet, no less. It's just amazing how he is going to, he just doesn't care how he is like, you know, the Republicans are just going down the drain, all of them, because of him. And forgetting, you know, to understand what reality is all about. And then there's another thing that's going on is that, you know, a number of states, including Texas, is looking at some type of system for having people get a card, an ID card, to vote. And I'm sure you probably didn't see this, but the state of Texas just spent $14 million on a web-based state computer program intended to centralize voter registration lists. Now, smartly enough, Harris County did not do that. In fact, you know, Harris County is bigger than a whole number of states in the number of people that are registered to vote.
Indeed.
So this $14 million system has been selected, even though it was more expensive than the one that was already tested. And already, because we're in an election right now, we have a statewide election for a, it's an amendment, but also we have a city council race open here in Houston. You know, Shelley, who ran for Tom DeLay's district. But already they found out that the mayor of Prairie View went to vote and his name wasn't even on the list because of this system. So it's just typical of what's going on, is that they spend all this money on these systems that don't work, that wasn't even proved to work, and you know, instead of worrying about making the system work, they more want to work on this card because they say there's this voter fraud, yet they have absolutely no proof, or you know, nobody's been even accused of this.
Yeah, and that is a nationwide problem.
Yes, yes.
You know, and it actually, Jack, it's funny that you bring that up, because it touches on a national controversy that's going on right now inside the U.S. Department of Justice with the fired U.S. attorney.
Yes.
What we're talking about is Democrats wanting to engage in what's called voter protection, protecting the right of every American to vote. Republicans are pursuing a urban myth, saying that Democrats and minorities in particular are engaging in widespread voter fraud. They are using this urban myth to try to push through proposals that disenfranchise minority voters from being able to cast their ballot. That's what this struggle is all about. We want to increase access. I say the Democrats. I'm not officially a Democrat, but you know my progressive leanings. We want to increase access to the ballot box.
Well,
voters, Republicans want to curtail it.
Yes, and there's many people, elderly people, who don't have access to birth certificates or passports, and even though they've been voting for 50, 60 years.
Jack, I don't have a passport. I've been wondering lately how to get one.
Well, I see the lines at the post office these days.
Well, one other thing, especially the one here in, this is Jennifer and I, especially the law that they're trying to put in here in Texas will totally eliminate the transgender from being able to vote. But due to the way the law is written, a transgender will not be able to vote in the state of Texas.
Well, that's par for the course. That's what they're trying to do. And you know what? I'm willing to bet, I don't have any statistics in front of me, I'm willing to bet that more transgender people vote Democrat than vote Republican.
I would probably take that bet. I think they do, as a matter of fact.
You could probably go there.
I think so. I think that that's one of the things, and I think that just as it's been in the past, the current Republican Party has been trying to disenfranchise a lot of voters, and as many as they can. And you're right about that statement. It is an urban myth, because there haven't been that many prosecuted voter fraud cases in the United States. But yet the Republicans go as if every election is, they've got to steal it to keep somebody else from stealing it.
Do you all know what the definition of an election in which the Democratic candidate wins is?
No, what?
A fraudulent election. That's the Republican definition of that election.
Well, you know, it's really interesting. About 6 months ago, I read this book about how the Republicans are going to have control on the House and the Senate and the White House, with some exceptions, for the entire next generation. Who would have thought that Bush would have brought this whole thing down for all the things that they were working on? But the reality is that they sold being conservative, and they lied about that. They sold being religious, and they're only using a religious people to get elected. They don't really seem to care about them. And yet, in all this stuff, basically, they're doing it, let the whole war thing, that they lied about that. You know, it's like, you know, maybe we ought to have this trial.
And you know, Jack, what today's headlines are all about?
What's that?
The inability of the National Guard in Kansas.
Yes.
To respond to the devastating, tragic tornado, because 40% of National Guard's people and 40% of the equipment is in another country.
Yes.
What would
yes.
that country be?
Yes.
Iraq.
Iraq. Somebody said it. Iraq.
Yes, and it was also mentioned on Bill Maher's show on Friday that of the money that was pledged to New Orleans from outside this country, we never took that money because we were just too proud and we can handle ourselves.
Well, you know, Jack, maybe we didn't need the money, but you know, I was looking at my bank statement earlier today. I could use the money.
Yes, yes. KPFT could use the money.
KPFT could use the money. For all of the listeners out there, call in. Please make your pledge. We need you to keep KPFT on the air.
So, David, I guess you didn't get invited to that dinner tonight, the white tie dinner?
Oh, with the Queen at
yes.
the White House, you
yes.
mean? You know, I live in D.C., and I'm beginning to get a little bit offended because I've now lived here going on 11 years. It's been over
it's
a decade.
Been that long.
And I still have not been invited to a State Department dinner, and I'm wondering if it's like I don't have the right pedicure. you know, okay, I don't own a tux. You know, maybe you've got me there. I don't speak the right language or something, but I just haven't been able to make it to a State Department dinner yet.
Well, David, what do you do for your day job?
Well, Jack, for my day job, I work for the National Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty. You can see our website at www.ncadp.org. Again, that's ncadp.org. You can also look at my blog at www.deathpenaltyusa.blogspot.com. And I should probably mention, Jack, that Texas has 14 executions pending over the next few months.
Yeah. Yes, it's really sad that we're the capital of that, yes.
Capital of capital punishment,
yes.
But we're working on that.
Yes, well, we are working on it. David, thank you for joining us, as
you
do on the first Monday of every month. And in the meantime, we're going to ask our listeners to do call us.
Yes, 713-526-5738. Please call in and pledge for our show, as well as for KPFT. There's a lot of good programming, and if you're just listening in for the first time, shame on you. You should have been listening before now. But if you just stumble across the channel, take the time to call and pledge. Add your donation to the growing list of donations that coming to KPFT. Please be part of the process here of KPFT. Good programming. Hear the truth. Hear programs you will not hear anywhere else, and now at 100,000 watts, we're getting out more and more places.
Jennifer, somebody called in and wanted to know, can you explain that a little bit more, how transgenders would be excluded from voting under this system?
Okay. What it is that you have to have an ID that represents who you're representing. In the case of the voter ID, under current law, a transgender cannot have their driver's license changed except through a court of law. And if in my case, I had to go to a court of law, I had to spend several thousand dollars to get my name and gender marker changed so that I could, in fact, have a driver's license to match who I am. Many of the transgenders in the Texas either don't have the money to do that. They may be living full-time as a woman or a man, whichever way they're transitioning, but they don't have the right identification, okay. In which case they present themselves as Jennifer shows up, but I have the wrong ID. They could deny me the right to vote.
Okay. So, in the meantime, we're asking you to call us at 713-528-5738 and, become a member of KPFT. Become a member of our dysfunctional family here. It's a lot of fun. But it's really interesting how KPFT has so many different programs. We have music, we have public affairs, we have talk shows, we do some national programming like Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman, which is just an incredible program. And it's that whole mixture. It's like, it's like the community that we all, aspire to be, the progressive community here. And it's really interesting how all these years we were talking about environment on KPFT, and finally now we have a mayor that's really sort of pushing that issue. Imagine suing a company because they send bad air over us. And that was just like, what a brilliant move. But KPFT has been part of that foundry of bringing that information up there. And, as the mayor said, like 10 years ago, it would sort of be like you were a traitor to talk about air pollution in Houston, because you'd be letting the rest of the country know. Well, it's important for us to have good air. It's important to us to have a good environment. And KPFT has been, ever since its inception, has talked about those type of things. Talk about equality. Who else but KPFT has all these different types of programs on that reflect so many different communities? And if you believe in that, we're asking you to become part of our family. Put your money where you believe in. And all of these organizations that raise tons of money to make life more difficult for us, and they seem to be very well to do that. KPFT does it on a much smaller scale, and we try to use that money in a lot better way, is that we don't get paid.
That's right.
We're volunteers. So there's a small staff here at KPFT, and most of us are volunteers.
Yeah.
And the fact that they're doing news now, that takes a lot of resources to be able to do news.
And we're here because we enjoy what we're doing, and we're doing a service. And it's a volunteer, yes. The thing is that we believe in what we're doing here. We believe in KPFT. And KPFT just can't be on without your support. And it is a family here. We're all a family. When you're not getting paid for something, to come up, spend your time, invest your time. KPFT needs volunteers and interns for different segments of the different broadcasts, as well as the infrastructure. Be part of the family. Pick up the phone. Dial 713-526-5738 and spend a little money with us. Put the money into KPFT and in the programming here, so you can hear the things you want to hear and hear the truth.
Well, and the truth is, sometimes your perspective, but we hope that your perspective is that you feel that we at least try to bring the other, other sides of things. And we certainly, we don't all agree at KPFT. It's not like we get that memo every day that Fox gets and says, this is your talking point. You got to say, you got to talk about this, and this is what you view on that. Murdoch was even trying to buy the Wall Street Journal out, that company, and one of the minority owners of it said that, he isn't fair and balanced. Who are we kidding?
Yeah.
That KPFT, and it's like a lot of us have disagreements over some of the stuff that we, in each of our particular shows, sort of feel. But overall, it's like we try to bring this discourse and this talking about, and how do we all, come up with some of these things. We don't all agree on things. Even here among us who are volunteers at Queer Voices, we don't always agree on things. But we try to do the best we can and bring out the information and be able to, have some type of dialogue in our community and what we do. And it's not just about the politics, although Jennifer and I and of course Deborah speak a lot about the politics, but there's a lot of other parts of our community that we do talk about. The culture. The culture is very important. It seems like we've moved a lot further ahead sometimes in the culture, and the fact that, we have movies and we have plays and we have books that are a lot more open about our community. And it's also amazing that, you know, probably the next generation, this whole thing about gay marriage, that's going to be over with because the next generation doesn't understand the problem, that why we shouldn't be able to get married or that we should have equal rights. And that's probably just scaring the whatever out of the right wing, and they're probably going to lose this issue. But that doesn't mean we should have to wait that long. You know, part of KPFT is education, and we try to talk about that. I mean, we still have, you know, people believing that being GLBT is a choice. Well, it's not. So we're asking you to call us now at 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. And on the line with us now, we have Joan Devlin.
Hi.
Hello. Hi,
there.
Joan.
Hi. How is it going? Is everybody contributing to KPFT?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. No, we need people to call right now.
You haven't had any big tornadoes out there, have you?
No, we've been very fortunate. We're not close to Kansas, so we've been lucky.
It's headed that way.
Yeah, so I've heard. But we had a sunny day today, so I'm going to hope for the best. And if not, Larry and I will be in our storm cellar.
Good luck.
Yeah. So we have on the line with us right now Laura Flanders, who is the author of Blue Grit, True Democrats Take Back Politics from the Politicians. Laura, are you with us?
I am with you completely in heart and spirit and soul.
Yes, Jack startled me because I was sitting here reading through your book. I love it. I couldn't put it down. My friends were trying to talk to me yesterday at lunch, and I just had my face buried in it. So good. So I wanted to start with the title, Blue Grit. Can you maybe explain to our audience where that came from?
Well, you know, it came from the idea that grit is the stuff that helps you to take on the tough challenges. It's the stuff that gives you the mettle to achieve the impossible. But it's also that pesky, impenetrable material that blisters your foot and gets in your shoe. And that's what I was trying to get at. People that both inspire on the progressive side of our political spectrum and make uncomfortable the Democratic establishment. I think of lots of kind of John Wayne's with left-wing politics.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I noticed in your book, for instance, you have a chapter that's dedicated to the culture wars. Can you talk a little bit about the culture wars? Because after the 2004 elections, we heard a lot about culture wars and moral values and values voters and all that good stuff.
We did, didn't we? I mean, coming out of the gate after the 2004 election, all the pundits were convinced that what had lost the election for the Democrats was the culture wars, by which they mean gay marriage, abortion, racial justice, you name it, all that stuff that they call social issues, and I never understood where that came from. If you're being discriminated against, how is that social? If it's about being promoted to a job or given a job or fired, how is that a social business? Whoever called that social, I don't think had been on the receiving end. Anyways, the pundits were, you know, 100% convinced this was why Kerry Edwards lost the race. And right afterwards, we had a sort of chorus of people saying the way that the Democrats move forward is to abandon these so-called social issues and focus on the blue-collar populist issues of class. So in my book, in Blue Grit, I look at that idea and say, well, for one thing, I don't agree with this social economic divide. And for another, who do we think the working class are that they don't have gay and lesbian people amongst them looking to be part of the American promise of the pursuit of happiness, that we don't have women in the working class that every so often need or want an abortion? What are they thinking? And finally, you know, who do the Democrats think their base really is? They're never going to be anti-gay, anti-abortion, anti-racial justice enough to satisfy their critics. All they're going to do is alienate their friends, and that's exactly what they're doing. And to really look at history, these issues that we call the culture wars have made tremendous advance in the last decade or so. 10, 15, 20 years max, we've been talking about gay marriage, and already we've got 66% of the population supporting some kind of legal recognition for lesbians and gays. So these issues aren't necessarily losers, and my book Blue Grit is packed with the stories of people who figured out how to campaign on a whole platform, a part of which was standing up for marriage equality or a woman's right to choose. And they won, even in conservative districts, because they had the courage of their convictions. They had to talk about the issues, and instead of keeping culture warriors, all these folks who have fought on these issues and been winning for years at a distance and treating them like the enemy, they embraced them, learned from them, and came out ahead. So when I say learning to, you know, learning to love the culture wars, I finally was thinking, you know, if only John Kerry could have learned from the AIDS movement, you know, when he wasn't the first person that was scapegoated when he was swift-voted and people told lies about him. AIDS and lesbians have had that experience for years. Poor women on welfare, same thing. The guys from ACT UP could have told Kerry, silence equals death. Bullies don't turn around just because you're nice to them. You have to fight back. So that's what that chapter's about. And I really believe this whole, you know, class versus social dichotomy needs to get a second look.
Talking to Laura Flanders, who's the author of Blue Grit, True Democrats Take Back Politics from the Politicians. And on that note, what base do you urge the Democrats not to ditch? Because there's several you discuss in your book, but you can just take it from there.
Well, I say don't ditch the Democratic base. I mean, whether you like it or not, gays and lesbians, women, environmentalists, the labor movement, we're it. We're who you've got. Poor women, people of color, immigrants. This is a very dysfunctional Democratic Party we're talking about. They both depend on their base and treat them like lepers. You know, on the right, you have a party that caters to the people at its margins and its base voters and the religious right movement and the libertarian movement. They whisper sweet nothings in the ear every election and make promises and kiss the ring. Sometimes they deliver, as they've done with the Supreme Court. On the other hand, you have the Democratic Party that, for the most part, pretends the people at its margins don't exist. I'm thinking about the fair trade movement, the movement for troops out of Iraq. And at the best, they treat us like lepers, but like if they get too close, they'll catch something. This is no way to run a successful political movement, let alone an election strategy, because it's those base voters you rely on every few years to turn out your vote.
Let's talk about that. Speaking of bases, let's talk about two myths you kind of shattered in your book. One is that the Republican base is, you know, walks in lockstep, votes in lockstep, is not very diverse, does not have any kind of diversity of opinion among themselves as to what's important and what's not. And the opposite, which is that the Democratic Party has such an amount of diversity that they simply can't bring us together. You know, if they support gay rights, they'll lose the blue-collar workers, et cetera, et cetera. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, I, you know, was stunned. I literally, the book came out of election 2004, and me having been at Air America throughout election year, and there's a massive audience that were very heavily involved in the election, and I'd heard them all year pouring their heart and soul into the race and doing more work than people had ever done, giving more money than people had ever gotten. And then the day after the election, waking up to find that they had lost. And I wanted to know, why did that happen? And the Democrats avoid a hat trick in 2008. And that's what you'll find in my book, Blue Grit. But what struck me as I traveled around the country to try and research what had happened and why, I mean, the options seemed to me that either the country was awash in conservative values or somebody wasn't doing politics right. What struck me was the disarray in which the Democratic Party in most parts of this country found itself. I mean, this was a part which right after 2004, when surveyed by the organization Grassroots Democrats, 2/3 of all state parties had no full-time communications director, nobody to communicate Democratic positions through to the media, through the legislature, sessions, no functioning website or site that was much use for anything at all, no full-time office personnel who could answer volunteers' calls. So you had this kind of dramatic collapse, no machinery on the ground, very different from what you found on the right. And you're right, we have this image of the right as very top-down, hierarchical, ideologically driven. What we sometimes are less aware of is how simply well-organized they are. In Nevada, when I went there in 2004, it was a presidential battleground state, not one of the ignored states, but one where they really poured a lot of effort into trying to get Kerry Edwards elected, they still had no computerized voter roll. They still had no full-time communications director until just a few months before the vote. The website was much of anything. And on the Republican side, it's a very different story. Priority has been put not only at providing leadership at the top, but also support at the bottom and developing a whole network of interconnected social groups, i.e. rifle clubs, church organizations, that come election season don't have to be paid or flown any place to work. They're in place, they're ensconced, and they get the job done.
I also wanted to talk a little bit about another dichotomy you discussed in your book very well, was the fact that blue candidates are winning, and winning quite handily in red states. And you talked a lot, in fact, about Salt Lake City, which is probably as red as it gets.
You betcha. Well, that was another thing I wondered. I thought, are we really this red-blue nation? And I went to the reddest place I could find on the map, which was Utah. I haven't voted for a Democrat for president since 1964. But Utah is like every other state of the union. The state could vote electorally, the electoral college, red, but every city with 500,000 people or more, and half the cities with 50,000 or more, vote Democratic. So even in a place like Utah, the biggest city, Salt Lake City, is represented not just by Democrats, but by one of the most progressive mayors you're ever going to meet, Rocky Anderson. Here's a guy who, when the president comes to town, he greets him not with a fancy luncheon at the town hall, but with a massive anti-war demonstration at which he, the mayor, excoriates the president for his policies. And when his email gets out to the press, in which he urges protesters to turn out, he says, well, too right. I'm urging people to protest. I'm charged with protecting the security of my constituents, and this president's policies are our greatest threat. I mean, this is a guy with guts, a guy who has signed his city up to the Kyoto Protocol and is reducing greenhouse gas emissions way ahead of the international deadlines. He's opposing the war. He's supporting gay marriage. And he's bringing people along through doing politics at the retail level. Right. He invited everybody from the business committee who was opposing his light red program to his house for lunch. And I think he cooked. He persuaded them that if they let the snow on their snow-capped mountains melt, they would have no tourist season in winter. He brought them over to his side. Light rail in Salt Lake City has been a tremendous success, such a success that people in the outlying districts that are represented by Republicans now want in. They want part of the program. They want light rail of their own. To me, the Democrats could be lifting up successes like this, these little beating blue hearts all around the country, little blue dots, where we're reminded of the value of community and society and what government's about. But they don't do that. And in 2004, there wasn't a single mayor that was spoke at the Democratic National Convention. The country's not too red, I argue. The Democratic leadership in Washington's too out of touch.
2 minutes, Joan.
Okay. And talk a little bit about losing forward.
Well, I learned that from the progressives of Utah, who said, we don't win every fight, but we end up stronger if we fight on principle and we stand up for what we believe. So, for example, even though gays and lesbians of Utah lost an gay marriage fight in 2004, and the state voted to bar gay marriage, et cetera, et cetera, they organized in such a way that by the end of that fight, they were stronger. And some of the leaders of that fight now sit in the state Senate. They were so effective in persuading their local constituents that they were leaders to get behind. That's what I mean by losing forward. It's, if you concede all your issues before you even fight, at the very best, you're going to end in office with your issues not being advanced. In this way, they may not always win, but they advance their issues, because sometimes winning isn't as important as putting up a fight. The right learned that years ago. First, you fight on the issue. You move people and educate them, move them in the direction you want to go, and then gradually you start winning office. But if you decide that you want to win at all costs, even at the cost of conceding what you care about, your issues and advance only your personal professional ambition.
Great. And how can people get the book, Blue Grit?
Oh, well, they can go to my website, lauraflanders.com. They can go to their local independent bookseller. They can buy online. If you want to know why grassroots matter, this is the book to read. And if you want to know the stories of people who are running and winning, even in conservative areas, without giving up on gay and lesbian equality, without giving up on women's rights, without giving up on fighting against this book, this is the book for you.
Great. We've been talking to Laura Flanders. She is the author of Blue Grit, True Democrats Take Back Politics from the Politicians. And you are listening to Queer Voices.
And it's time for you to pick up the phone. I think I heard the phone ringing once. Let's check out in the lobby. But, you know, we're almost halfway through our show, and we really need you to step up to the plate and call us at 713-526-5738.
You just might have heard that phone ring out here. You did, actually. We've got a pledge. This is somebody right here in Houston, actually, Humble. I'm going to say that wrong, aren't I? Humble. I'm going to do that. And they've called in. They're not a a brand-new listener. You said a little earlier that, you know, the brand-new listeners out there, shame on them for being a brand-new listener and for not tuning in earlier. But you know what, guys? I've got to give them a little bit of a pass here. Because we are now at 100,000 watts. They can hear us out in, let me say it right, Humble. Atascocita, I hope I nailed that one. and out in Katy and all the outlying areas, places where, you know, before, at our previous power wattage, you know, might not have heard the best reception. But now you can. And I hope that that brings us a lot of those brand new listeners. And I hope that we have a lot of brand new listeners out there. If you are listening for the first time or the second time or the third time, give us a call. Let us know that it's something that you like to hear and that you want to keep on hearing.
So call us at 713-526-5738, 713-526-5738.
I'm Rick Watts.
And I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending May 5th, 2007. The European Court of Human Rights in Strasbourg ruled this week that a ban on the 2005 Pride March in Warsaw was a violation of human rights. The seven judges, including one from Poland, were unanimous. The court agreed that freedom of association and assembly and prohibition of discrimination and the right to an effective remedy had been denied. All are guaranteed in the European Convention on Human Rights. When Warsaw activists defied a ban in 2004 and peacefully marched, skinheads associated with All Polish Youth, an affiliate of the far-right League of Polish Families, assaulted them. In May 2005, Lech Kaczynski, as mayor of Warsaw, refused to issue a permit for the Pride Parade. He was elected president of Poland in October of that year, and his government includes League members. In its judgment, the court said in part that the positive obligation of a state to secure genuine and effective respect for freedom of association and assembly is of particular importance to those with unpopular views or belonging to minorities because they are more vulnerable to victimization. The ruling follows by just days a resolution in the European Parliament condemning Polish officials for numerous anti-queer statements and reports that the government was drafting legislation to ban so-called promotion of homosexuality in schools. Robert Biedron, president of the Campaign Against Homophobia and one of the Polish activists who brought the case, told the Associated Press that the court ruling is a very important step toward equality for gay and lesbian people in Poland, and I think also in several other countries in Central and Eastern Europe. This was the first case of a banned LGBT Pride march being challenged in the European Court of Human Rights. A similar lawsuit filed by Pride activists in Moscow is pending.
GenderDocM, which organizes Pride activities in the Moldovan capital of Chisinau, is reporting that they peacefully held two events there this week, despite the city's ban of a Pride march. Local officials took that action despite the nation's recent Supreme Court ruling that last year's ban was unconstitutional. Claiming that an official permit was required, police prevented an attempt by LGBT activists to lay flowers at a monument to the victims of repression. They then laid their flowers at the feet of the police officers and left. A City Hall spokesperson issued a media release soon after, saying that no permission for the event was required. There was also a demonstration in front of City Hall to protest this year's Pride March ban. While there was a noisy counter-demonstration, police protected the queer contingent, and the event remained peaceful. GenderDocM Executive Director Boris Belenetsky said that the demonstration showed that city officials' fears that a pride march would provoke public disorder were not justified. He said that LGBT supportive protest demonstrations were also held at Moldovan embassies in Stockholm, Vienna, Bucharest, Washington, and New York.
The LGBT people in Thailand are campaigning for protections in the new constitution, being drafted in the wake of the September 2006 bloodless military coup led by the Royal Thai Army. The new military leader suspended the constitution, prohibited political activity, stifled the media, and instituted martial law. They've promised that a new democratic government would be in place within a year. A statement by the Thai political gay group to the Reuters news agency said that, "We hope the guarantee of rights for the third sex in the constitution will pave the way for amendments in other laws to give gays equal rights." It said that despite Thailand's relatively queer-friendly reputation, there is still clear prejudice.
Singapore's former Prime Minister Lee Kuan Yew, the nation's founding leader, told a meeting of the ruling party's youth wing that if some men are born gay, then gay sex should not be illegal. According to a report in the Straits Times newspaper, Lee said that, "I have asked doctors about this. You are genetically born a homosexual because that's the nature of the genetic random transmission of genes. You can't help it. So why should we criminalize it? Let's not go around like moral police, barging into people's rooms," he said. "That's not our business." Gross indecency between men is punishable by up to 2 years in prison in Singapore, though the law doesn't seem to be enforced. Lee, who was prime minister from 1959 to 1990, is now a special cabinet minister in the government of his son, Prime Minister Lee Hsien Loong.
The United Kingdom's sexual orientation regulations, recently approved by Parliament to protect gays and lesbians from discrimination in the provision of goods and services, took effect on April 30th. Discrimination based on gender identity has yet to be addressed. Catholic adoption agencies, which unsuccessfully sought exemption from the regulations, have until the end of 2008 to comply with the new laws. Well-known gay activist Peter Tatchell, who recently announced his Green Party candidacy for Member of Parliament, celebrated significant achievements made by the queer community in the last decade. "We've overturned nearly all of the homophobic legal discrimination," he said. "The gay rights movement has been one of the most successful law reform movements of all time." But he cautioned against creeping apathy in the queer community. MEP Michael Cashman, a co-founder of Britain's major LGBT advocacy group Stonewall, echoed Tatchell's sentiment, saying that just because we have achieved equality doesn't mean we pack up and go home. The sexual orientation regulations took effect in Northern Ireland on January 1st.
There were also advances for LGBT people in the U.S. this week. The Oregon State Senate, by a wide margin, approved legislation that would allow lesbian and gay couples and heterosexual couples unable to marry to form legally recognized partnerships. The Oregon House passed the bill last month, and Governor Ted Kulikowski has said that he'll sign it. The state has a constitutional amendment banning same-gender marriage, so the partnership legislation was carefully crafted to avoid legal challenges that it would circumvent the amendment. The Family Fairness Act will grant bereavement or sick leave to care for a partner or partner's child, allow a person to choose a final resting place for a deceased partner, and transfer assets from a deceased partner to his or her surviving partner if the deceased had no valid will. It also enables couples to obtain joint insurance, enter joint rental agreements, and get an equitable division of property in a partnership dissolution or annulment. Oregon will become the seventh U.S. state to offer broad protections to same-gender couples. Two other states and the District of Columbia have more limited domestic partnership laws. It's the second major LGBT rights bill to pass in Oregon in the past 2 months. In late April, the legislature approved, and the governor has also promised to sign, the Oregon Equality Act, which prohibits discrimination in the state based on sexual orientation or gender identity or expression in housing, employment, public accommodations, education, and public services.
The Colorado House has approved a bill banning workplace discrimination based on sexual orientation or gender identity or expression. A similar measure passed last month in the state Senate. The two versions now need to be reconciled into one bill before going to Governor Bill Ritter, who has said he'll sign it. Colorado law already bars discrimination in hiring or in firing, demotions or promotions based on race, age, or disability. Colorado is poised to become the 20th U.S. state to ban workplace discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation, and with bills in two other states pending their governor's signatures, at least the 10th state to ban discrimination based on gender identity or expression.
The Vermont Senate this week gave final approval to a bill prohibiting bias based on gender identity or expression in employment, public accommodations, housing, and credit. A similar measure passed earlier in the week in the State House, and a joint legislative committee hammered out the final version. If it's signed by Governor Jim Douglas, the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force says that 36% of the U.S. population will be protected from discrimination based on gender identity or expression. Douglas vetoed a similar bill last year, but has reportedly said he will sign this version. Vermont banned workplace bias based on sexual orientation in 1991.
And finally, according to a report this week by Chicago Tribune foreign correspondent Kim Barker, a female impersonator is hosting a wildly popular national TV talk show. What makes the story even more interesting is that it's in conservative, predominantly Islamic Pakistan. On one recent late-night show with Begum Nawazish Ali, which debuted 2 years ago, the host flirted with the country's law minister, batting her long eyelashes and calling him darling. "Look at my hand," she told the minister, showing off her French manicure. "Your hands are beautiful," he responded. "I feel like kissing them." Pakistani men and women don't normally flirt publicly, and television hosts certainly don't call people darling. Ali, as played by 28-year-old male actor Ali Salim, is a 40-something widow of an army colonel. As a man in drag, writes Barker, he's able to shatter every cultural and religious norm. The show does have its critics, but aside from Ali's beauty, which even some Pakistani men admire, while acknowledging that it's a man in drag, the TV host's popularity also comes from the fact that she preaches love, goodwill, and tolerance, even between rivals Pakistan and India. Living in a so-called extremist society, Ali's alter ego Salim said in an interview, "I have never received any threats, and I have never received any hate mail." Fayez Agaria, who designs most of Ali's saris, said that people are awestruck because he's on TV. He's not a transsexual. He's not a transvestite. He plays a character. There's no label for him.
That's News Wrap for the week ending May 5th, 2007. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Rick Watts.
And I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Walensky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
Hey, sing if you're glad to be gay. Sing if you're happy. This way.
Well, we want to remind you that we're in fundraising. It's that time of the year. We do it three times a year, and we ask you to donate to KPFT because we hope you feel it's important. But we're also trying to keep our program going by having guests and talking about all these issues that we usually talk about. So we'd like to do both. So if you can, you know, you can do your end of it by calling us now at 713-526-KPFT, 713-526-KPFT. Make that pledge. You can make it online at kpft.org. And we can continue on with our programming. Well, speaking of continuing on, we have John Etchman here, who is with Pom Pom. And, John, what is Pom Pom?
Pom Pom is people opposed to moving our parade out of Montrose.
Okay. And there's a meeting coming up this Wednesday?
Yes. Wednesday at 6:30 at the GLBT Community Center.
Which is at 3400 Montrose, the second floor. So what has been going on?
Well, one thing real quick, because it is Wednesday, and I know the club upstairs gets very busy, so anyone who's coming should make sure to let the parking attendant know that they're coming to the community center so they won't have to pay for parking. And what's going on is we will be doing several things. One is working on the many successes that the organization's had so far and showing the Pride Board in the city that there is enormous, overwhelming opposition to moving the parade. One of those is that we will have an entry in the Pride Parade this year. We're really excited about that. And I'd love to tell you what we're planning in terms of that because we have several people who've volunteered to be cheerleaders in this. My partner and many of his very, very handsome Colombian friends and some of his beautiful Colombian women friends, too, and many others from the Montrose area and around the city who are actually practicing cheers these days, getting ready for this big event. So we're going to have something really special for that. Charles Armstrong has already told us he's very behind what we're doing, and he's going to be providing help so that we can make sure that the cheerleaders look look terrific, that we have the best throws in the parade, and we're going to have one hell of a pride showing on that night.
So, and I'm trying to, you know, still be independent on this thing, because I'm one of the founders of Pride Houston,
sure.
And there's arguments in both sides to move, not only move it physically, but also move the time of the year. So let's first talk about the time of the year. What is, you know, now is everybody in Pom Pom unified on this, or there's some different opinions?
I think I think pretty much everyone's quite unified. I did see that Outsmart had a poll, a survey online where
uh-huh.
people could go and vote as to whether, one, they wanted to move the parade out of Montrose, and two, if they wanted to move the date. And there was very little difference in the poll numbers. It was, of course, overwhelming. I mean, just enormously overwhelming. I think last time I checked, it wasn't online today. I wanted to go on and see what the latest figures were, but about a week I checked, and they had about 600, somewhere around 600 people who'd responded, and it was 80%. Opposed to moving the parade. And then it was just slightly lower, about 73-74%, I think, opposed to moving the date. So I think there's significant, you know, I mean, it is summer. It's very hot. A lot of people don't like the heat, even though at night it's been, you know, just a very magical event. But I do think that for the most part, people are unified in opposition to moving either the date or the parade's location.
Well, and I think some of the argument is, well, it's just a small vocal minority that's against it.
And I think that the figures from Outsmart show otherwise. I think anybody who goes around and talks about this can find that the passion against moving this parade is enormous. The numbers are enormous. And quite frankly, I'm only hearing maybe from a very small handful of people who are just excited about the possibility of moving the parade to downtown, and one of them is the Pride president, Carol Wyatt. Other than that, I'm finding some people who say, it'd be nice, you know, downtown offers visuals, it offers some space and everything else, but at least the times I've had a chance to talk to them and others have had a chance to talk to them, when you really talk about what that move would be right now and what it would possibly mean to the Montrose area and the fact that, you know, downtown has just not been supportive of this parade. Everyone's saying how downtown's ready to be. Well, I'd like to see about 10 years of track record of downtown showing true support for this parade and this community. And who knows, maybe that will be the time that a move to a different site would be in place. This isn't the time.
Well, as my history of Pride for the past 25 years, I mean, the parade does seem to work in Montrose. I guess the other part of the question is the festival. I think the problem, the argument is that the festival can't be multi-days where it is now, and that it's sort of stuck on a couple of these streets because there is no parks open area in Montrose to be able to expand it and make it bigger, and at best you're still dealing with the residents and the businesses that are around that area. And at the same time, though, the history of Pride, they are trying to build that festival up, but the festival still has a long way to go, whereas the parade is sort of mature.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's another failure of the city in terms of not, you know, doing more to create these wonderful open spaces and communities. I mean, we just don't have them in Houston. And so, quite frankly, downtown doesn't really have them either. I mean, there's nice spaces, but certainly not like you'd find in other cities where you have gigantic open spaces for this. Maybe this new Discovery Zone in front of the convention center might be a nice place for something in the future.
Well, it's my understanding, though, that is they're making that to have, like, a restaurant and a couple events and a little theater here and stuff like that, but it's not really being made to be this big sort of space to have a large festival.
Yeah. I was at the Cinco de Mayo parade this weekend, and I was talking with a couple of people who are involved in organization, and they said that eventually they would have it go down that Avenida de las Americas and then around the edges or something, but, you know, we'll see. You know, the thing is that the festival is sort of well, it's not that it's a new event, but it's always been secondary in the city to the parade. And a lot of people say, well, it needs to grow bigger, it needs to be bigger. But, you know, there are a lot of cities, Sydney, Sao Paulo, the biggest parades in the world, and the festival is secondary in those cities. Some cities, the festival's bigger, but it just hasn't been the case here. I think that I haven't heard too many people opposed to the idea of Pride having or doing a festival, maybe at a cooler time of year in downtown and seeing how that works. But that makes a lot more sense than taking the heart of the GLBT community and moving it at a time when And I mean, it makes no sense to do it, and there's so much opposition to it.
Now, recently we heard some stuff from Seattle. Mm-hmm. So what's going on up there?
Well, in Seattle, they had a very similar situation occur. The Capitol Hill area, which is a very nice area that sits a little higher than downtown, has been the site of their GLBT community for many, many years. It's their historical heart of the community. From what I understand, there's always been a lot of... there's been a group that's wanted to move it to downtown and a group that's wanted it to stay. And the group that wanted it to move... SOAP, I think it's called, Seattle Out About Pride or something like that. They managed to get the okay to move it to downtown, and the crowds were very supportive. They had wonderful crowds, but they weren't prepared for all of the other factors in place, and some of those factors were the costs, enormous costs, that were far greater than they were in Capitol Hill. And probably the most important thing was that, from what I've heard at least, is that volunteers and those people who had played a big part in making that parade a success in Capitol Hill were literally out of energy. They were disillusioned. They found that, in essence, half of their group, of their core group of people that made that parade a success, did not want to move the parade, and so they devoted their energies to another alternative parade up in the Capitol Hill area. And I think as much as anything, that led to what was a demise of that parade in many ways. And now this year, and at least for next year, the parade has definitely returned to where it will take place in the Capitol Hill area. The Seattle Pride Group declared bankruptcy just a few weeks ago.
And they were like in the hole like $100,000, I believe.
$100,000. And they're very different cities. I mean, Seattle has a giant core of people who live within walking distance of downtown. You can walk easily from... Well, it's a long walk, but you can go from the Capitol Hill area to downtown quite easily. It's almost like a continuous city. And, even though Montrose and downtown are probably less than a mile apart, many of us have ever walked that?
I have, but very few people have.
It isn't a very fun walk, is it, though?
It's gotten better that Midtown has developed, but Houston is just not a walking town.
Well, that too, but I've always, I always bring this up, and I think I'm the only person who sees this as symbolic, but I'll bring it up again. Between downtown and Montrose, there is no direct road. You have to turn. If you go down Bagby, you've got to take a right on Elgin. If you go down Gray, you've got to take a left on one of the streets through there. And that tells me something about the disconnect between this city and our community. And until that disconnect is fixed, and I'm not saying they've got to build a direct road, but until that disconnect is fixed, there's no sense in moving this parade to downtown, to an area that has virtually no GLBT businesses. I love the city with all my heart, but downtown is soulless. Has anybody been down there at night lately? I mean, it's just not there yet. And at least in terms of support from the city, it's nice that the politicians come and wave to the crowds and are part of our parade. That's wonderful, but that's not support.
How much communications have you had with the Pride Board, who's ultimately the ones who are going to make the decision?
I probably should have done a better job on that. I've been real busy with work lately. But Carol Wyatt and I have talked on the telephone on occasion. We've had very cordial emails. I've made sure to let her know that, at least from my perspective, and those of almost everybody I'm aware of, we're not anti-Pride. In fact, I think everybody I've talked to has said we will be supporters of Pride because it's an important, critical part of this. I have enormous respect for her. I know that she's done so much work for this community and done so much in fundraising, and I know that she's passionate about what she thinks is the right move, but I just think that, in her position as president of that board, she needs to listen to this community, and, that's where the problem is right now. I don't think they're hearing the voice of the community, and I think if they make that move, they're going to hear a voice that they don't want to hear.
So, what's going to be discussed at this meeting? What's going on Wednesday?
Yeah, we're going to talk about the our entry for the Pride Parade and making it as spectacular as we possibly can. We want to win every award. We're also going to talk about the successes that the organization has had. I mean, the Chronicle's come out with an op-ed piece, not just a little tiny piece, but their full editorial board came out with an op-ed piece and that could not have been clearer in terms of not the reasons not to move this parade. The very, very very lovely Jennifer Renee Poole and the GLBT caucus have come out with a resolution also opposed to moving the parade. The Outsmart poll, there's been so much at this point. It's been a just one success after another in terms of what we want to do, which is to make sure the Pride Board knows that the community does not want to see this parade moved. It belongs in Montrose. Montrose has plenty of room to expand for it. Look at other alternatives for the festival. You know, they want to make Houston a destination city. Well, why not make a series of spectacular events throughout the year? Why not have a Latino Pride like Los Angeles has and schedule that for a different part of the year? Why not work with the Asian community on a possible, you know, Pride event of some kind? Why not work with all the organizations instead of just saying that by moving to downtown we establish some imprimatur of respect or something? You know, Montrose is our home, and this is the time when everybody gets to come to our house. They get to come to our place. They get to come and celebrate our way of life and our part of the city. And that shouldn't change. It's not time to change that.
Well, and the meeting is this Wednesday at what time?
6:30
at the Community Center, which is 3400 Montrose. Now, it should be made clear that this year the parade and festival is still at its usual location. Parade at Lower Westheimer, and the festival is around Commonwealth, just south of Westheimer. And my understanding is that the board will meet in August to actually make the decision of whether next year or the year after they will be moving it, possibly moving it out of Montrose. So if you're interested in this, and I mean, and you welcome people coming from both sides, right?
Sure. Well, to be honest, our meetings were there to discuss what we need to do to make Pride understand that there is opposition to the move. We're not there to discuss the benefits of moving to downtown. It's not that we don't want to hear them, but they're there for those who want to go and find them. This organization was founded as a way to express our opposition to the move. And eventually, I hope this organization, once we persuaded the Pride Board of the wisdom of not moving, that this organization can morph into an organization that supports the GLBT heart of this community, which is Montrose, and making sure that this community stays vitalized and energized and will remain that for this city.
John, how could people contact you if they can't make the meeting?
My email address is nechlaw, N-E-C-H-L-A-W, at yahoo.com. They can call me on my cell phone at 713-419-4067. And
John,
if they go to Yahoo Groups, think yahoogroups.com, if they type in for the group pompom-Houston, they can then join our listserv and keep abreast of everything that's happening too.
John, thank you for joining us. You're listening to KPFT, and we want to remind you that we are in the pledge drive. This is the time of the year that we come to you and ask you to help support KPFT, support Queer Voices, support all the many different types of programming that's here on KPFT, a lot of local programming, some national programming, but KPFT is all about Houston. And you're listening to Queer Voices.
On Queer Voices, our next guest will be director Jason Stevens from the Houston Pride Band, talking about their upcoming performance, Our Favorite Things, of which this track is one, on Queer Voices. original recording of the Glenn Miller Orchestra playing Cole Porter's Begin the Beguine, and that brings us into our next guest.
Well, Glenn, is that an original recording that you did?
Yes.
Okay.
You do know that I am that old.
Yes, like I should be throwing stones, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Exactly.
Right, right. We are here to talk of, speaking of bands, we're here to talk about the Houston Pride Band. And Jason Stevens is with us. He's our artistic director. And the Pride Band's been around for a few years, hasn't it?
Just a few. We are actually coming up on our 30th anniversary.
Wow.
This next year. So this is kind of the prequel to the big celebration that we have.
Well, and, you know, there was a gentleman named Andy Mills who ran the band for a number of years, and he actually brought them out to the Hollywood Bowl at one time and talked about it for like 5 years after that because he was so proud. And there's actually an association of bands around the country, isn't there?
Yes, there's the Lesbian Gay Bands of America, of which the Houston Pride Band is a member of, and they have an annual conference every year. We're actually looking forward to going to it this year. It's in St. Louis in October, and we're actually raising money right now to send all of our band members to go. It's just a really exciting thing to get all these bands, all the lesbian gay band members all over the country to come and just kind of congregate and attack one city and just have just a phenomenal concert.
Well, and you know, nowadays you probably don't think that much of live music because we have the iTunes and we have all this other stuff. We have the radio, we have the satellite and stuff, but you know, and it's probably downplayed a lot in our schools, isn't it? Learning how to play a musical instrument.
It is. We have, you know, the pop sensation that is American Idol now, and so a lot of it gets just these sound bites where you don't really focus on actual quality and everything, and it's just, you know, how to make a quick buck instead of focusing on, you know, the actual joy of music and really and doing it because you like it and because you love it, not necessarily just to make money off of it.
And so you were brought in to be the artistic director. So what exactly does that mean?
Well, actually, I started out as a band member. We ended up having an opening, I guess, about a year and a half ago, and they asked me to step up. I have a music degree and have a little bit of background to it, and so I stepped up, and basically I get to have the fun of choosing the music and really challenging our performers in the group, and they've just absolutely performed admirably this year. Every challenge that I've presented to them, they've met, and it's a lot of fun seeing the looks on their faces from when you pass out the music and they go, "Oh, there's no way," to when you get to the concert and they play it and it's phenomenal. It's just really just oh, I don't even know how to describe it. It's just awesome.
So, for somebody to become a member of the band, what kind of background do they have to have?
Well, we don't have necessarily a level of ability that you have to have, but we do have some members that don't have their own instruments, so we have instruments for the band that you can use. We always encourage donations from the community and from other folks within the band. We have some people that have donated other instruments, but it's basically just a love of music. We have our mission is, you know, to promote the lesbian, gay, transgender community, and all the other ones that are listed in there. I don't want to slide anyone. But kind of promoting that through music and then the love thereof.
Oh, great. And what type of commitment does it require for somebody if they're interested in being in the band?
Well, we don't necessarily have a commitment, so, per se. We rehearse every Wednesday night at Resurrection MCC on TC Justin 11th. And for about 2 hours, and we know everybody has their own things going on in their own lives, so we don't require that you be there every week. I mean, it's great if everybody can come every week, but there's a big social aspect of it too, which we really enjoy.
Well, and I, you know, Debbie Hunt and Connie Moore have been part of the band for a number of years and mm-hmm. helped out in many ways in the community, and actually there's a story that they really helped start Pride when it became Pride Committee of Houston by donating some of their expertise and getting us started. So, and then I also have to thank them for playing at my event that happened back in, when was it, March, April?
Mm-hmm.
This was so long ago, March. and that the band does go out throughout the community and play at certain times.
Oh, definitely. We're not just out there for marching in the Pride Parade. We have usually about 3 concerts a year. We're actually looking at expanding and doing other little small outreach events within the community. We're really planning on a couple of new things this year in conjunction with the 3 concerts that we give along with the parade. So it's really starting to grow a lot more other than just kind of being our own little standalone band concerts.
Well, Jason, tell us about the event that's happening Thursday.
Oh, sure. We've called it Our Favorite Things. It was a way for me to get off of not really having to plan a program. I actually gave the reins over to the band, and we pulled the band, asked what some of their favorite pieces were that they played, whether it was in high school or college or even something that they just liked listening to and they wanted to play. And we got just a ton of entries, and it was really exciting to go through all of them and see some of the pieces. It's like, I've never heard of this one. There's no way we can do that. But what was so amazing is that just about all the pieces, I mean, there was a lot of consensus. And so we picked the best out of, I guess, probably 50 to 100 entries, I guess.
Wow.
And narrowed it down to about 8 to 10 and came up a great, great program. I mean, I'm just really excited about it. And it's going to be just phenomenal, I think.
Where is it going to be again?
It's going to be at Resurrection MCC. It's TC Jester 11th. It's the address is 2025 West 11th Street. It's going to be on Thursday at 7:30. We open our doors at 7. You can get tickets at the door, and they're $10. And there's going to be a reception afterwards, so you know, you can meet and greet all the folks in the band and have some snacks and just, you know, enjoy the music.
Oh, great, great, fabulous. And thank you for coming by and informing us about what's going on with Houston Pride Band.
It's my pleasure.
And what's the website address?
It is www.houstonprideband.org.
Boy, that's tough. That's tough. Well, Jason Stewart is the artistic director for the Houston Pride Band, and thank you for coming by and telling us about the event that's coming up this Thursday at the Resurrection MCCR Church. And just want to remind you again, we're in Pledge Drive. And, I mean, you go listen to our lobby, and it doesn't sound like it's Pledge Drive out there. And, in fact, they're probably not even listening to us because the phones aren't ringing, so they're not sure it is Pledge Drive. We're asking you, if you have a commitment, if you feel that what we do here at KPFT is important to you, it's important to our community, it's important to, to be able to get the word out. You know, certainly as we go back a number of years and how important KPFT was before there was the internet, before there was a weekly newspaper, and now we're at that time again where we don't have a weekly GLBT community newspaper. We help get the word out, and it's not only on Career Voices, but it's also on After Hours. And it's also, you know, you listen to the programs here all day long, and there's issues brought up about the GLBT community.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the number is 713-526-5738. 713-526-KPFT if you need some help with that. But call in, pick up the phone. We do a lot of work here for you. You're become part of the family, and if you've donated before, stretch a little more. Write a check, send some more in. You know you're committed to us. Send some money in for it.
And as always, you can pay for it. I mean, you can pay for it on a, you know, so much per month type of thing.
That was what I was going to say. $5 a month, you know, that if that's all you can afford, or $10 a month. It's a small price to pay for what you get here at KPFT in the wide variety of programming, and of course Queer Voices on Monday nights.
You're listening to Queer Voices.
We'll look to a band of earthly angels for protection and celebrate an Australian anniversary later in the program. The U.S. House of Representatives voted on a bill this week that would increase the ability of local law enforcement agencies to prosecute hate crimes motivated by a victim's sexual orientation or gender identity. Karen Miller of Free Speech Radio News has more.
Current federal hate crime legislation allows for the prosecution of hate crimes motivated by race, religion, national origin, or color. The Local Law Enforcement Prevention Act of 2007 adds sexual orientation, gender identity, and disability to the list. Senator Gordon Smith of Oregon is co-author of the bill.
it's time to do this, and it's about time we do this. And with a new Congress, a new chapter in our Democratic history, we have an opportunity to come together as Republicans and Democrats, because sexual orientation doesn't register Republican or Democrat, and hate is visited upon people regardless of political affiliation. So it's about time we do this.
The act provides additional federal resources for local law enforcement officers. Even though most states have hate crimes legislation, proponents of the bill say some local jurisdictions lack the funds and staffing to adequately prosecute these crimes. Representative James McGovern, Democrat from Massachusetts.
While we have made progress toward equality in many facets of our society, hate crimes continue to spread in cities and towns across the country. The main reason why we have been unable to aggressively pursue and prosecute hate crimes is because law enforcement agencies in our states and towns lack the tools and resources.
More than 200 law enforcement, civic, and religious organizations support the bill, including the NAACP and the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights. But those who oppose the bill says it gives special protection to those in the lesbian and gay community. Representative Lamar Smith, Republican from Texas.
Every violent crime can be devastating not only to the victim, but also to the larger community whose public safety has been violated. That is why all violent crimes must be vigorously prosecuted. However, this bill, no matter how well intended, undermines basic principles of our criminal justice system. Our criminal justice system has been built on the ideal of equal justice for all. Under this bill, justice will no longer be equal, but depend on the race, sex, sexual orientation, disability, or status of the victim.
Conservative groups strongly oppose the bill, saying it stops preachers from speaking openly with their parishioners. Mary Ann Salazar is an attorney with several conservative ministry groups.
What we're most afraid may happen is that it's going to erode the foundational principles of this country of two things: First Amendment right to free speech and freedom of religion. And the way it opens the door is it opens the door for the federal government and for judges to interpret this bill, where anyone who is saying anything against homosexuals from a pulpit, a preacher, let's say, in the instance of a church, can be persecuted if that person is subsequently hurt by anyone who heard that preacher say homosexuality is an abomination.
Representative John Conyers, Democrat from Michigan, says groups like these have nothing to worry about since the bill only addresses violent acts.
There is no First Amendment disabilities about this measure in any way. That would be the last thing that would be allowed to be in this bill. What we're saying now, a vote for this bill is not a vote in favor of any particular sexual belief or characteristic. It's a vote rather to provide basic rights for and protection for individuals so that they are protected from assaults based on their sexual orientation.
The bill was passed by a House vote of 237 to 180 and now will move to the Senate.
Our thanks to Karen Miller and Free Speech Radio News for that report. A measure similar to the Shepherd Hate Crimes Act once passed in the old Republican-controlled Senate, but it went no further. Chances for the new bill in a now Democratic-led Senate are good, but for its advocates, the latest news from the White House is not. A statement from the Office of Management and Budget in the Executive Office says that President Bush's senior advisors are recommending that he veto the bill if it reaches his desk, arguing that the need for it has not been demonstrated and that it may be unconstitutional.
Angel Action as Divine Protector, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. In 1998, Matthew Shepard was brutally beaten and left to die outside Laramie, Wyoming, just because he was gay. Matthew's close friend, Romaine Patterson, heard that a faith-based hate group planned to picket at the murder trial. So, she went to work. She created white angel costumes with wings 7 feet tall and a span of 10 feet. During the trial, police restricted the picketers to a small area outside the courthouse. A dozen of Romaine's friends, dressed as angels, encircled them and spread their wings, blocking the picketers and their cruel messages from view. Romaine's concept was a brilliant show of love and support for Matthew's family and friends. Later, she created a do-it-yourself kit for others in need of an angel in white. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Dustin Richardson.
Visibility is the key to success of the lesbian and gay movements for civil rights protections. Hi, I'm Urvashi Vaid, inviting you to listen to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine, one of our most visible and articulate voices for our lesbian and gay communities. Remember, an informed community is a strong community.
Ten years ago this month, Australia's last sodomy law crumbled into the sea, clearing the way for the island state of Tasmania to move from being the country's most homophobic to one of its most welcoming. The sex law reform struggle itself took a decade, and activist Rodney Croom of the Tasmanian Gay and Lesbian Rights Group led the charge for much of that time. When that first legislative victory was declared in May of 1997, Croom talked with This Way Out correspondent Greg Redding about its significance and about what he hoped would happen next.
On Thursday, the 1st of May, at 5 p.m, the Tasmanian Upper House passed the Gay Law Reform Bill without any amendments whatsoever, which means that Tasmania has gone from having some of the worst criminal laws in Australia in terms of discrimination against gay men to having some of the best. We now have an equal age of consent, no promotion and encouragement laws, nothing like that. All we have is perfect equality before the law.
Did you feel it was touch and go at any time there with those various amendments which they were arguing for?
Yes, it was. We didn't know until right at the end whether the bill was going to get through unamended or whether it was going to be wrecked by these discriminatory amendments. Of course, the problem wasn't just getting bad amendments. The problem was that if any of those amendments had got up, the bill would have been wrecked because none of those amendments would have been acceptable to the lower house, and we would have had to wait another 12 months for the bill to come up again. But as it happened, none of that occurred, and we got the best bill, the more than we could have hoped for, really.
Why did you get stirred up in the very first place, Rodney?
Why did I get involved? Well, there have been quite a few people who have been involved in the Tasmanian Gay and Lesbian Rights Group from the beginning, not just me. But I guess I've taken on a high public profile over the issue. And that's really something that was set at the beginning of our campaign in 1988, when there was hardly anyone, or there was no one in fact, who was willing to be public on the issue. There was a great deal of invisibility and repression of homosexual people in Tasmania, and I guess I was just the least unwilling of everyone involved at that stage to go public. It was still a difficult decision for me to make, but I decided I'd do it where no one else seemed to want to do it, and I've just kept on going since then.
Did you ever feel like giving up?
No, I've never felt like giving up. From the mainland, what you see really is the Tasmanian upper house rejecting law reform again and again, and then finally on May the 1st passing it. But the perspective down here is quite different. It hasn't been one of constant losses and then a victory in the end. We've had constant victories all the way along. Victories which have chiefly been constituted by an increase in public support for gay law reform, an increase in institutional support as well, throughout that 9-year period. To an extent where I think Tasmania could now be said to be one of the most tolerant places in the country when it comes to gay men and lesbians. And that's been because of the Gay Law Reform campaign, a campaign which has been very high profile, very visible, and which has reached into the hearts and minds of every Tasmanian. Every single person in this state has had to sit up and think about where they stand on this issue. And that's something that occurs very infrequently in communities in the Western world, where people can just sit back and ignore issues such as this if they wish to. But not in Tasmania. It's been too divisive, too heated, too high profile, and the result has been that a very large number of people indeed have come to the conclusion that gay men and lesbians deserve equality.
You have had, though, right up until the end, a very vocal opposition within the general community. Why do you think that was particularly the case?
Well, people have written reams and reams on why there's such a vocal and militant homophobic movement in Tasmanian society, and people have come up with all number of different explanations. Some have focused on our history, particularly our 19th century history, with the association between convictism and homosexuality, and how that association still scares members of the Tasmanian establishment who don't want to unearth the dark side of our history. Other people have looked at the way that the state's economy has been floundering and the transition that we've been making very painfully over the last 15 years from an industrial base based on hydroelectric power to clean green, so-called clean green industries. And that's caused a lot of heartache for a lot of people, and people have concentrated on that as an explanation. That is that people have taken out their tensions and frustrations on this issue. Whatever the explanation is, it has been a very heated and divisive issue, and the anti-gay lobby has been very militant. But at the very end, when the last vote was taken, there was actually only one member of the upper house who voted against it. All the others realised the game was up, and they just gave up and sat back and let it go through, which was something that was utterly astounding for us, given that they'd fought so hard for so long to keep those laws.
Tell us about the reaction that night.
Well, like I said, it was a very tense day. The supporters of reform had managed to make sure that there was a majority on our side all the way through, but members kept swapping over. I guess they wanted to maintain some little level of anti-gay credibility by voting against us on at least one vote. So it was very tense. We didn't know if we were going to get it or not, right until the last vote. So our first reaction was one of relief. After waiting for weeks and weeks for the parliamentary process to finally conclude, we had this wonderful outcome. And many of us started to cry, tears of joy and tears of relief. And then that evening, once it had begun to sink in what had actually happened, there was a spontaneous gathering at a cafe in Hobart called Cafe Chaos, about 150 people, mostly gay men and lesbians. And the feeling there was electric. This had finally happened, it had finally gone through. We were equal. It was absolutely wonderful. And then throughout the weekend there were more celebrations. And there were still many people who were in shock. I had people coming up to me and saying, it's really happened, hasn't it? They can't change it, can they? They can't go back on what they did. It's done, isn't it? They couldn't believe that it actually happened after so long. They couldn't believe that the victory was so conclusive.
So what's ahead now for the gay and lesbian community in Tasmania?
Well, at a legislative level, in terms of legal rights, we'll be focusing a lot of energy on anti-discrimination. Tasmania is the only state without a broad-based anti-discrimination act, and we will be supporting moves to change that. There are bills before the Parliament at the moment which would prohibit discrimination and vilification on the grounds of sexual orientation. And we're hoping that with the Upper House's newfound support for the principles of non-discrimination, that they'll pass that. We'll also be looking now at relationship recognition. In particular, what kind of relationship recognition people in this state want. There's quite a bit of disquiet about having our relationships recognised on the same basis as heterosexual de facto couples, and people are keen to look at other options. So we'll be looking at that as well. At a broader social and cultural level, I think what we'll be seeing in Tasmania is a bit of a flowering of gay and lesbian culture. Certainly the law reform debate has seen a lot of cultural as well as political work occurring in Tasmania around gay and lesbian issues, but hopefully we'll see even more of that. Obviously we'd be encouraging gay and lesbian people who have left the state to come back, and encouraging visitors who have been boycotting Tasmania to come now as well.
And what's ahead for yourself, Rodney?
Well, I'll still be interested and involved in gay and lesbian rights issues, but I'd like to take a back seat because I've been fairly high profile up until now. And on issues like anti-discrimination, I'm happy to do some background work, but I'd be keen to encourage other people to take on the advocacy roles and not myself. I find it difficult being recognised in the street, and it happens a fair bit. Not that it's ever negative, people are very supportive, particularly at the moment. Full of congratulations, but still I'd like to go back to being slightly less high profile and see if I can recapture a bit of anonymity.
Congratulations, and thank you for your work over the years, and the rest of the team.
Thank you very much. We couldn't have done it without you.
That was Rodney Croom of the Tasmanian Gay and Lesbian Rights Group, interviewed in May 1997 by This Way Out correspondent Greg Redding. As Croom predicted, anti-discrimination and same-gender partner laws were to follow, and the lives of LGBT Tasmanians changed dramatically. In a 10th anniversary statement, Croom said, "Tasmania is a shining example of how education can overcome the most vicious hatred and the most heavy-handed official prejudice."
We're gonna keep on loving boldly. Keep on loving boldly. Keep on loving boldly. We're gonna keep on walking forward. Keep on walking forward. Keep on walking forward. Never turning back. Never turning back.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. This week, Rick Watts, Tanya Kane Perry, Rex Walker with Bill Kelly, and Graham Underhill contributed program material. Thanks also to Karen Miller and Free Speech Radio News. Judy Small performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. You can listen online to This Way Out anytime, exclusively at outinamerica.com. You can also click on the link at the top of our website to get there, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are underwritten by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and through direct charitable donations from listeners like you. Thank you. As we approach our 1,000th program, please log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can help keep us on the air. We literally can't go on without you. To request a copy of this week's program, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on 2XX Canberra, Australian Capital Territory, WREK Atlanta, Georgia, KRZA Alamosa, Colorado, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Everybody stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
Okay, it's that time. We are heading up to the end of the program. We've got about 15 minutes left. 15 minutes, so we really need to sort of pick up where we lost space. Let's go out to the lobby and see how we're doing. We heard the phones ring a couple of times, but we definitely need to hear the phone ringing more than a couple of times. So we're asking you to call us at 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. You know, we're able to do this show here pretty much 52 weeks out of the year, including holidays. We work holidays, even, you know, because there's lots of Monday holidays, and we don't complain about it. We're happy to be here, and for the most part, we're doing a fresh show every week, talking to people, talking about what's going on in the community, you know, letting people know about the arts, about the politics, about, you know, therapy sessions and stuff like that. And so we're really asking you to do your part. And I mean, I hope you enjoy the program. I'd certainly like to you know, hear from you all. You can always comment, jack@queervoices.org, and send me, you know, you're doing well, you're not doing well. You know, tell us what you think about what we're doing on the program. Give us some suggestions. But now we're asking you to call and pledge some money to keep KPFT going. Let's, well, in fact, you know, we only have a few people out in the lobby right now, but can you give us an update?
Absolutely. We've got volunteers taking pledges right now. We've also got a few standing by, so give us a call. You know, we're not totally booked up here. We've got some free phones at 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-KPFT. And really, of course, what we're looking for is your support out there. With shows like this, you can't find them everywhere. I don't know of you know, any other radio station that I can sit there and fiddle with in my car with the radio and find the kind of content, the kind of dialogue that you get right here on KPFT with shows like this. It's a valuable asset to the community. It's something that we need out there, and it's done with your support. We're going to continue to do exactly what we've been doing with your support at 713-526-5738. Give us a call. Let us know what's important. Make a pledge.
Do we have anybody to thank?
Right now, we've got our pledge from Humble. We've got somebody on the phone right now. I'll have somebody to thank in momentarily. I don't have that name just yet, though.
Okay.
And we're looking forward to hearing from you. Hey, what's that number again?
713-526-5738. 713-526-KPFT. It's really important that if you think that this community radio station is important to you, KPFT's been on the air since 1970. Pacifica's been on the air for over 55 years. It started in San Francisco and Berkeley, and there is only 5 Pacifica stations in the network, but some of the programs like Democracy Now! Is heard on like many, many stations around the country. So Pacifica has sort of been the leader in many ways. I mean, Pacifica sort of invented public radio, invented community radio, and the fact that it's not all the programming comes from Washington or New York. In fact, very few parts of the programming comes from Washington or New York. Most of the programming comes from Houston, from this community, from the people who volunteer here. We're not always the most professional, but we do try to give you a variety of some viewpoints and things that are going on in the community, letting you know what's going on in the community. Certainly, KPFT has been part of this community, reporting from City Hall. You know, that's what I love about how these TV stations and some of these radio stations. Oh, we got a reporter in Washington. Well, why don't you have a reporter at City Hall? That's what's going on around the corner. And what's going on in some of the other cities around the area, not just Houston. And because it starts here, you know, it starts here. What's going on locally is very important.
Oh, absolutely. There's so many things that you hear here. Many of the other programs on diverse topics and call-in programs, not like some of the other stations where, you know, you'll call in for your opinion and you get the other person's opinion all the time. Here, you get a chance to call and talk on some of the talk shows. Also, like Jack said, tell us how we're doing. Send us some suggestions. If you've seen someone, a guest that you'd like to hear on our program, send us an email. Let us know who it is. Let us know how to contact them. We'll see if we can get them on the show. I know that for putting the show together, it takes a lot of time and effort, and it's all volunteer for us to do this. We need your help. We need your help and you to do your part. You're part of the family. So take some time. Call 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT, and make a pledge. Make a pledge now. Our program, you know, we're going to do this next week. But, you know, let's make our goals tonight so we won't have to do all this next week. And if that's up to you. And if you don't have a large amount in your account right now, you can always put it on your credit card, or you can pay it out over a period of time, over a period of months. You know, we're flexible here because we want you to be part of KPFT.
Well, and it's really interesting here. We both Jennifer and I are just dealing with these allergies, and I do apologize. There's some really neat sort of little bribes that we can give you if you pledge to KPFT. You know, things like a T-shirt for $60, a KPFT News T-shirt for $75, a KPFT mug for $75, the Peace Tees for $90. There's a cap. There's a whole bunch of stuff. Picker Poets of 1985. A lot of really, really neat stuff that we have in our, I guess it's called a prize closet. At least it was called a prize, I guess it's called a pledge closet, but in commercial radio we used to call it the prize closet. We're asking you to step up to the plate. If you think that what we do here at KPFT is important, that we're privileged to have this forum. You know, every week we have 2 hours. They don't tell us who to book, who to put on the show, who not to talk to. There was a time at KPFT that we sort of were under the gun on certain things that we could do and can't do. As long as we remain in that sort of legal thing by not using foul language, we here at KPFT as a programmers are allowed to, you know, decide on what kind of subjects we're going to, you know, talk about, as guests, and we really try to make this a community forum. We really try to keep it open up to the different elements of you know, this controversy that's going on now about Pride. We've had both sides on. We'll continue to do that on the pros and cons of moving the parade. We talk a lot about politics because, you know, we feel it's really important that not only at the presidential, you know, time that you vote for presidential, but there's so many other very important races all the way down the ballot, from judges to people who serve on the school board. That's also very important.
The judgeships, very important.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, we have state government, we have federal government, we have city government, we have county government. All that's important. And it's important that we do try to give you different perspectives of people who are, you know, part of the leadership of this community and people who are just the volunteers. And I mean just the volunteers. We're just the volunteers.
Absolutely.
We're part of this collective here. I am very, very fortunate in the people who volunteer at Queer Voices. I mean, my job is a lot easier because of Deborah and Renee and Jennifer and Glenn and JD and Greg and am I missing
Joan?
Joan, yes, Joan from Joan still volunteers. She moved to Iowa about 3 or 4 years ago, and Joan does some incredible book interviews, and JD and the music that he picks out. You know, JD is very, very particular, and I pretty much stand back and say, okay, it's your, this is your area. Occasionally, like once or twice a year, I get to play a song or two, but overall, JD is so good and so meticulous about having a person that is either, you know, the lyrics are either written by, performed by, or am I missing some aspect here, that it is queer music. And, you know, his queer music heritage, this once a month type of thing where he does a theme like hip hop or...
Oh, yeah. Where else would you find the history of queer music within our community and around if it weren't for KPFT and J.D. Doyle here on Queer Voices? You know, it's part of our heritage as GLBT people that we might miss. You know, you might hear somebody's playing music, but is it all queer music? Is it all someone? And coming up on the 14th, I believe he's got some transgendered performers going to. He has an interview as well as some music. All of that is something that you wouldn't get anywhere else. I don't think you'll hear it on any other station.
So we're asking you to become part of this family, becoming part of, you know, I call it sort of a dysfunctional family because we don't all agree, but we're all here for the same cause. We're all here to bring out ideas and bring out the different aspects of what's going on in the community, whether it's about environment, whether it's about being a vegan, whether it's about the GLBT community, whether it's about the Hispanic or the Black community, the Asian community. Where else can you get this type of, you know, diversity? I mean, there's even the open forum, the open journal that's on at noon where it gives people who don't have a regular slot, time slot here, to be able to give, you know, different views of what's going on. The coverage of, you know, what happens at the International Festival, what's happened at the Art Car Parade, which is this weekend, and all this stuff is brought to you here on KPFT in the discussion form. And, you know, we don't usually have shows where people are yelling and screaming at each other like they do on some of the conservative talk shows, or that somebody's continually preaching to you. Certainly we have our viewpoint, but we also try to do respect other people's viewpoints. So call us. We have just a few minutes left here. 713-526-5738. 713-526-KPFT. You should have that number memorized because you probably heard it a million times if you listen to KPFT. KPFT. And we also encourage, if you have never made a pledge before, if you never stepped up to the plate to become part of KPFT, to do it now. You can do it on the web at KPFT.org, or you can call because we have people right here, and it's very quick. It takes usually less than 2 minutes. You can charge to your credit card. We can bill you. We can do all types of stuff. We're asking you to become part of Queer Voice family and the KPFT family.
And it's 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-KPFT. And remember, there's an election this Saturday. Don't be someone that can only complain because they didn't get out and vote.
And if you'd like some more information on that, you can go to hglbtpc.org. Houston.org. That's Houston, Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, Transgendered Political Caucus.org. You can find out more information. So we'll see you next week, and you still have time to call 713-526-5738. Thank you.
Have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, Jennifer Renee, Greg Chapman, and Jack Valensky. Be sure to listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
KPFT's new volunteer orientation gives you the chance to go from being a listener to an active part of Pacifica Radio. At the new volunteer orientation, you'll learn about KPFT, its history, and opportunities to volunteer at this unique and exciting radio station. The new volunteer orientation happens Friday, May 4th at 6 p.m. and Saturday, May 5th at noon. Everyone is invited, and women, youth, and people of color are especially encouraged to participate. The new volunteer orientation is free, but space is limited, and attendees should RSVP. Call Eddie Garcia at 713-526-4000 or email volunteer@kpft.org to sign up now. KPFT, Houston.
KPFT's Spring Pledge Drive kicks off May 7th, but you can help us out and cut the fun drive short with your pre-pledge. Listener support sustains this station and...
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.